Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your motherfucking ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 214 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of August 10th, 2018. Sorry, I had to swallow. I'm Chris Randazzo and joining me tonight is founder of StoneAgeGamer.com and all-around nice gentleman, Ryan Cross.
Ahoy!
Ahoy! We are recording this on a boat. Dan is away on vacation, so Ryan is here to do his best Dan impressions. Go ahead, do a Dan impression.
Oh, shoot, man.
That's perfect.
I could have probably thought of something if you would have gave me some time. But
well, he's promised to talk about beer, wrestling, and pad. Before we go any further, see, if you were really doing a Dan impression, you would have said, oh shit, instead of oh shoot. Because Dan never misses an opportunity to curse.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to be professional here.
We try. We never succeed. Before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. So, Ryan, how the heck are you?
Pretty dang good.
Pretty dang good.
Yeah. It's been a while. I mean, shoot, I don't even know the last time I was on here.
Maybe
2016?
I didn't live here.
Where I live now either, so. Actually, I've moved twice, I think, since last time. Oh, yeah, I think so. Maybe last time I've been on the podcast, so.
Well, we lose track of time a lot, you know? I kept saying, the first time we had Banjo Guy Ollie on, I was like, yeah, we'll have you on a couple of months. And then I think it was 2 years before we had him on again. Just because I'm really great at losing track of time. I guess I'll fill in the Dan side of the conversation. Have you been playing any games lately?
That's a good question. I got Sonic Mania a while back, but then I moved, so that kind of went to the back burner for a while. But now that the new DLC is out, I haven't bought it yet, but that reinvigorated me. But I'm kind of waiting for Shenmue 1 and 2 for PS4.
Oh, that's right, you're a huge Shenmue fan.
Yeah, so I have that coming, but... I tried some Fortnite. I don't know.
I played exactly one game of Fortnite. It was like, yeah, it's not for me. Not for me.
Yeah, my friends are into it. And it's not that it was bad. It's just, I don't know. I just think I'm too far gone, man. I'm too old. The shooting thing I can kind of do, you know, but then
bringing the crafting and stuff.
Yeah.
No idea. Just all right. You know what? This is for the cool kids. I'll fire up some Space Invaders and
call it. I did make it to third place.
Holy crap!
The first night we played because I got a legendary bush.
I'm sorry. What?
So you know how there's different item quality of like the guns and stuff you can get.
Actually, well, no, I don't.
Yeah, like so white is like. You know, your basic green is a little better than that. Blue is better than that. I think purple is better than that. And then there's like orange or gold or something that's like considered legendary. So I opened a treasure chest and it dropped out a legendary bush, which all I know is the bush is you wear the bush so you look like a bush, right? I don't know if it being legendary actually helped at all, but. Saying that I have had a legendary bush is funny enough. So yeah, I just kind of hid in the bush until finally someone figured out I wasn't a bush and shot me.
Wow. This game really does sound amazing.
But no, after you get killed, you watch the person who killed you and what they're doing, right? And you're like, holy crap, I don't know if I'll ever be able to put enough time into this game to ever be that good. So it's almost like, should I just give up now?
I mean, here we are talking about Fortnite, which is the biggest game of the universe, and you just told me that you came in third place because you pretended to be a bush. And then somebody figured out you weren't actually a bush and shot you.
Yeah.
I don't know why this is tickling me so much. It's just freaking funny. Oh, God. Go back and play Sonic Mania. That game's great.
Yeah, it is. It's
downloaded
amazing.
The DLC myself, playing as Mighty and Ray are both really interesting. You know, they're a little bit different than expected. Like, they add a little bit more of a... Ray, in particular, just kind of makes the game feel really different because of his weird little gliding technique. It's not like Knuckles at all. It's like... It's got, like, the Mario cape from Mario World, kind of. It's very weird. It adds a very different feeling to the whole thing. But I like how the levels are kind of sort of remixed as well. So you got, like, they look different enough that they are exciting. And you get to play a bunch of the Angel Island Zone, too, which is cool because I love Angel Island Zone from Sonic 3.
Right.
Yeah, definitely put a little more time into that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little miffed that... I got the collector's edition when it originally came out, so I didn't get any physical copy, you know, so that's...
Oh, that's right. That was a download code in a box, right?
Yeah. I mean, you got the statue and some other stuff, but, you know, I'm kind of like, man, you know, but what can you do? I don't know. Maybe if I get... I still don't have a Switch. If I ever get one, I'll probably get the Plus version just to have the little cart even...
Yeah.
You know, just to have something physical, even though I don't know how much data is really stored on there compared to what they download or whatever, but...
I think with something that small, it's got to all be on there, but, you know, we've all heard about what's happening with, like, the Spyro trilogy, only the first game's on there, and the second two you gotta buy, and that's not even on Switch. That's on freaking PS4. Like, how dare you?
Yeah, I mean... That's the thing, you know, it's like physical media isn't even physical media anymore, you know, so people are like, I want the physical disc. I'm like, but you're not really getting the game. You're basically, it's just a license is all that disc is.
You're getting like the broken ass version of it before they patched everything too. I like what Limited Run Games does. Like those kinds of things are, Those kinds of things are pretty serious, and I don't know. Did you see the Wonder Boy, the Dragon's Trap that they released for Switch, where the cart actually had the little checkerboard thing from the original Master System? It was just such a really great presentation.
No, I didn't see. I think I remember seeing something about that, but I haven't seen it. I've heard of that company. I know they do some good stuff, and it's a great idea. I mean, it's something I wish I would have thought of.
Oh my goodness. I know, speaking of Limited Run Games, they finally released, I think they released, or a bunch of people started getting, like, early shipments. They are the ones that did the replacement Sega Saturn and Sega CD cases.
That's right.
I really, really, really want to see, I just totally forgot to check for, there was a bunch of people talking about how they were going to do some video reviews of them. And I forgot to look for them because there was two different people doing them, and one of them went with a Chinese company, and so they were looking into an inexpensive way to do it, and so they went to a Chinese company, and now they have the molds, and the people from Limited Run, the guy from Limited Run who wanted to do these things saw their case and wasn't impressed, and so he was really happy with the custom one he was doing. That's supposed to be just really, really, really great, and I know I have a handful of cracked Saturn cases, and I love this idea of people making new versions of these little pieces of the history that are falling apart, like, besides the discs themselves, because, you know, disc rot's a thing, Saturn games aren't going to last forever, but, you know, the cases that you can put on your shelf, I mean, like, as much as the actual games are the thing that's there, almost to an in just slightly lesser extent, the actual packaging is so awesome on old games. It's one of my favorite things about them to collect. I mean, especially you know, when you're talking about old Nintendo games and Super Nintendo games, and, you know, you can get an EverDrive to play all the ROMs and not have to take the things in and out of the boxes, but then you have the boxes and the manuals to, like, just line up on a shelf and drool over from time to time because you got all that great artwork and stuff. But
right. I mean, it's kind of like, I'm looking to buy some arcades for my new house because I moved all the ones I had from my old house down to Ohio to the store because I moved into an apartment. It's a temporary in-between thing. And, you know, you see all these multicades, and I'm like, man, it would be nice to have one, but I really like to look at the original arcade cabinets, you know. And
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe one multicade or something, you know, just so there's more variety. But, you know,
some of those
I'm actually looking mainly for games that, for my house, that, like, you can't play, you know, aren't just a joystick and buttons games, you know, games that use trackballs or light guns and stuff like that. Stuff that's the best way to play it is through the arcade, you know.
I've always wanted some of those. I think the little triple pack things are kind of really good compromises. Not those newer ones that they're, like, selling at GameStop and Walmart, the, you know, $300 or $400 ones that have, like, a handful of games in them. I'm talking about, like, the ones that's, like, the Pac-Man, Ms. Pac-Man and Galaga machine, you know? Or the one that I love, the Nintendo one, the Donkey Kong, Mario Brothers, and Donkey Kong Jr., because they have a bunch of the original artwork on the cabinets, and they're reproductions of the original cabinets, just with some, you know, combining the artwork together in one. I feel like that's a good compromise because, you know, not everybody has a ton of space to put arcade games in. I know I would if I had more space, and maybe I will someday when I'm older, you know, when the kids are a little bit older and my basement isn't covered in toys. But, I would love to put a handful. I'm just looking at the corner of my basement right now. And like, oh, I put an arcade cabinet right there in the corner, like three of them in a row, maybe a pinball game. Oh, God, I'd love to have a pinball machine. What I wouldn't give for my own Twilight Zone pinball. It's my favorite pinball machine.
I don't know if we have that one at the store or not. You'll see when you come to visit. I don't know. Andy and Jackson love pinball. So, there has to be at least 10 pinballs there.
Oh, I'm so excited. So, fun fact, Dan and I have been talking about our vacations on the show. I'm going to be going on vacation in a little bit, and on my vacation, I'm actually going to get to check out the Stone Age Gamer store. So I'm super ultra excited to do that and poke all the different things and people that are there. I don't know where I was going with that, just saying that, you know, a little inside baseball. Well, that's where I'm going.
Yeah, I mean, it's for the first actual company trip for Stone Age Gamer. So
that's true, yeah.
That you'll be out here, so... That's exciting.
It is exciting. I guess before we go any further into all this other territory, I just wanted to talk a little bit, since I'm not going to be on the show proper for another couple of weeks, because the next week's show is our panel, and then Dan's going to be doing the show. I just want to talk a little bit about the stuff that I've been playing, because I have I have done a few things of note. I finished West of Loathing, which was amazing. I mean... If you've listened to the show at all recently, you've heard me just going on and on. Last week, I read a bunch of stuff from the game. But so, Ryan, do you know anything about West of Loathing? Have you listened to me go on and on about this game at all?
No.
All right, so this is it's like a point and click adventure game with stick figures. I'm at the end of the game, and I mean, I finally finished it. And just to kind of give you a good idea of the humor in this game. The main plot of the game is you're helping this train get across the West because it's like a Western. And when you get to the last train stop, there's this crazy old guy with a beard who curses you and steals the train. The curse he gives you is antivirus, where it changes your view in the game to, like, a really segmented view as if you have ant eyes. So it's an ant-eye virus.
I see.
And it took me a while to piece together. I don't know why it didn't click with me in the first place, but after I beat the guy, because you finally catch up with him and you have a big fight with him on top of the train, the guy's name is Norton. Norton's antivirus.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Point and click adventures, man. Those are always fun.
Absolutely hysterical. I cannot recommend this game enough. So please buy it. Buy that and buy Bomb Chicken.
Speaking of point and click adventures, sorry to cut you off.
No.
I just bought Monkey Island 2 on Steam, and I just started playing it, I think, two nights ago. So I haven't really got very far, but that's another game.
Oh my god. The first Monkey Island, that was the special edition thing where it's got the redone graphics and stuff?
Yeah. At first I wanted to play it in the old graphics, but as I was because you can flip back and forth instantly, you know,
yeah, between yeah.
Neat. But as I played more and more, I'm like, you know what, I think I'll just stick with the new graphics.
I mean, and because the old graphics have their charm, but they did such a great job with the new ones, and the voice work is great. I mean, it's really, really good.
And audio commentary, which is really a neat feature, you know, in a game like that.
Yeah. Let's see. I downloaded Picross S2, which I tend to go on and on about. I love Picross, and Picross S2 is really great. It's got this cool new mode where you beat a bunch of levels, and then it opens up a... what's it called? Like a group Picross or a... I can't remember exactly what the mode is called, but you get to these giant, giant pictures that are all segmented, and then you do like little mini Picrosses that unlock a piece of this like giant puzzle, and then when you do them all, it unlocks a huge picture. It's awesome.
Is that how it's pronounced? Picross? I always thought it was Picross.
I've always just called it Picross. I don't know. I could be wrong. It could be Picross. I always looked at it as Picross, like cross between picture crossword. I don't know. I'm making this shit up.
maybe it's just your East Coast accent. I don't know.
It could be. Yeah, we'll call it a New Jersey thing. But it's freaking great. I love it. But it reminded me, like, now that that's there, I was really kind of rationing Picross S1. I was just like doing a couple of them here and there because I didn't know when they were going to release another one. So now that there's another one already out, I can just go back and beat the like 40 or 50 Picrosses I have left in the first one. So big fat thumbs up to that. Also, just before the show, Overcooked 2 came out today, and Karen and I played the first couple of levels, and it's awesome. It's really refined. It looks a lot prettier than the first one. Like, you can tell that they learned a lot from making the first game. And, oh boy, we did sushi and sashimi. The story in this... Did you play the first Overcooked at all?
No, my friend, he told me to get it, and I was about to buy it. And he's like, oh, wait, you can't play over the internet with each other.
Overcooked 2, you can.
Good.
Which is nice. But yeah, no, Overcooked is not very fun single player, but as soon as you add a second person, the game is out. It's one of the best co-op games I've played. It's especially great couch co-op. Like, playing multiple people in the same room is just an absolute blast. But one of the things that people I don't think that have ever played Overcooked don't understand is that while it looks like it's just this really bizarre game about, you know, weird-ass kitchens, but it also is post-apocalyptic. Like, in the first one, you're trying to prevent this giant spaghetti monster from eating and devouring and destroying the world. So you go back in time to learn to be a better chef so that you can feed him enough to stop the apocalypse. And in this one, which is fantastic, the Onion King has found the Necronomicon, and it gives him this like recipe about bread, and he's like, and add the yeast, and then you let it rise and rise, and then it flashes over to a graveyard, and all these like bread zombies come out of the ground, and it's like, oh no, it's the unbread.
Oh man.
So you have to go around and learn all these different recipes to satisfy the unbred so that they won't, I don't know, destroy the world. It's the story is tenuous at best, but it's absolutely hilarious, and it's great. We did the first couple levels. We kicked ass. It's got a lot of like really nice little quality of life improvements over the first one. I'm quite pleased with it. Ah, boy. So this show's a little bit all over the map because, I don't know, I didn't plan super well. But there was something that happened today that I kind of wanted to get your input on, see if you had heard anything about it. Did you hear anything about the Dead Cells IGN review controversy?
Yeah, I actually watched the video, the comparison between the two reviews. All I did was, I saw it on Reddit.
Uh-huh.
Someone had posted the video, and I watched the video. I didn't read any follow-up on it, like articles or anything like that. But it was pretty blatant. I mean, yeah. I don't know how you...
That was pretty blatant, yeah. So, for anybody who doesn't know, I mean, I've mentioned on the show before, I'm a fan of the IGN's Nintendo Voice Chat podcast. I love that show. And I was pretty bummed when Jose Otero left. He was the host, and then they replaced him with this YouTube guy, Philip Mewson. And I was like, all right, well, if they've added this guy, I'll give him a shot. And I was enjoying him on the show. I thought he was a pretty entertaining guy. He seemed to know his stuff for the most part, and hooray, Nintendo Voice Chat's still fun to listen to. But then this Dead Cells review comes out, and this like YouTube channel with like 20 followers or something called, was it Boomstick Gaming or something?
Yep.
Was like, that's mine. IGN just ripped me, like just totally plagiarized my review from a couple of weeks ago. What do I do? And so IGN pulled down the review and did a bunch of, looked into it, and then I just found out about it, I don't know, an hour or two ago that they posted their response, and they have parted ways with Mr. Mewson and sent out their apologies to all parties involved, and I guess they're going to have somebody else re-review it, or I don't know what they're going to do, but boy, if I lived in L.A., I would be applying for that guy's job immediately. I am like, I'm cheesed off at this guy because... He's got a job that so many people would want, and especially me. Like I would love to be IGN's Nintendo guy. I would love that, but I don't live in Los Angeles, so that's a physical impossibility for me. But
I mean, a lot of people hate on IGN. Personally, they don't bother me too much. Cause what I like about them, for the most part, they stay out of the political stuff, like Polygon and Kotaku and some of those other ones do, which to me, I just want to know I want news about games, not politics or Trump or anything like that mixed in with my games,
I completely agree. We actually try to do that on the show. I mean, every now and then Dan will crack a joke, but we move on pretty quick, and that's exactly how I feel about it. I enjoy IGN because it doesn't throw a lot of slants around. And I know a lot of people accuse them of, like, people buy their reviews because they're like, oh, these people gave Star Wars The Last Jedi a 9-point whatever the heck, and that means that all their reviews are pointless. And it's like, so many different people work for IGN. And I've been following them since the Matt Casamassina days. Like, I like their Nintendo coverage because... I'll find people who work there that I like. I tend to agree with their opinions a lot. And that way, when I read their reviews, I have a pretty good idea of whether or not I'm going to like something or whether something's going to bother me. Casamassina I liked a lot. And then it was Craig after that, and he was really fun. And Jose Otero, I really respected his opinions and everything. And a lot of these people got jobs working for Nintendo too, which is kind of awesome. And, I was just really bummed that this guy would do that, because, I mean, first off, plagiarizing is dumb. Like, if you don't
if you're going to watch it, obviously the guy didn't play the game, otherwise he wouldn't have plagiarized it so badly, in my mind. Like, at least played the game of any significance.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do that, I'm not saying you should, but, I mean, if you're going to, is it really that hard to make it sound way different, even if you are following kind of the same, opinion of the other one?
I mean, at the end of the day, like, if you're sharing the same opinion as somebody else, just put it in your own words, I guess that's the difference between a reference and just straight up plagiarizing.
Well, the crazy thing was, like, he did change some stuff, but it was insignificant stuff. The stuff that stood out, like how he worded things, that made it more his style, is what he copied, thus making it... I don't know, man.
And that's the thing. Like, I really want to play Dead Cells. I'm intentionally not, because I've started Horizon. Oh, crap. I've meant to talk about that, too. So, next on my list. But, yeah, I'm intentionally not buying anything else because I've started Horizon and I want to start I want to spend time with that game and just focus on that. But damn, Dead Cells looks really good. And I was pretty surprised by it. I was like, all right, when I first read it this morning on Twitter, I thought, well, I don't know, maybe this is just some sort of, maybe it's a coincidence, you know, like maybe these guys just have really similar opinions. And then I watched the comparison video from Boomstick Gaming. I was like, oh no, that's a ripoff.
No, yeah.
That's plagiarism. That's just bad. And how do you do that? And how do you get to be, you know, he's a YouTuber guy that gets called up to this really cool position and then just kind of pull something like that. I just left a bad taste in my mouth.
Yep.
But I tell you what hasn't left a bad taste in my mouth. I finally started Horizon Zero Dawn on my shiny PlayStation 4. And boy, this game is... I'm only about a half hour in, okay? So I haven't actually gotten any of the main game yet. It's a lot talkier than Breath of the Wild. See, now, I have almost no frame of reference for Horizon, but on our Game of the Year show, everybody was telling me, like, this game is, you know, this is their Game of the Year. This is Dan's Game of the Year. It was Dean's Game of the Year. It was, like, no, people have told me that this game is better, just blatantly better than Breath of the Wild. And then other people say, you're crazy, Breath of the Wild is blatantly better than Horizon. And what I've picked up on so far is that they are two radically different approaches to similar ideas. Because what I noticed, the big difference so far, is that Breath of the Wild is just like, wake up, Link, here's the world, go nuts. Mm-hmm. And Horizon's like, I'm a dude, I was exiled, and now I got this little girl, and I want her to do a little Lion King thing, and then I met a witch, and then she was like, I'm gonna bless her name, and you hold her up over a cliff, and some clouds are gonna talk to you or something, and then it's a few years later, and now I'm that same little girl, but I'm a bigger little girl, and I'm in a cave, and I'm running around a cave, and I can't really do anything but jump and walk, but then there's some shadowy stuff, and then I make it to the end of the cave, and I find a Saiyan Scouter from Dragon Ball, and a bunch of circles show up, and I press some buttons, and technology starts going off, and I'm like, I'm doing all this stuff, and I have not even started the game yet. This is just, it's showing me a bunch of cinematics, and then I'm playing some cinematics, but what I'm here for is to be that Aloy girl, who is the little girl that I am so far, and be running around in that giant, awesome world, hunting these giant, awesome-looking techno monsters. And I had, like, 40 minutes to myself the other night, and I went downstairs and I fired up the game, and I didn't get to do anything even resembling that because I'm all playing through this story. And it's a neat enough story. It's just, it reminded me of why I've been so happy to just play indie games so far this year, because I just like picking up and playing. It's just like jumping right into the games. And sometimes I do really enjoy story stuff. And I just kind of have to get myself into the right mindset because I'm coming off of West of Loathing. So I've been playing Picross, which is pretty monotone, and West of Loathing, which is black and white stick figures. And now I'm playing Horizon, which is freaking lush and colorful and gorgeous. And it's quite the culture shock, but I will say that thus far, even though it is different from my initial expectations, just based on how many people were comparing it to Breath of the Wild, I am thoroughly enjoying it. So thank you again to our listeners for providing me with a PlayStation and the game to play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't play a lot of newer console stuff anymore. I play mainly on the PC just for the convenience, you know, of it. And, but man, some of those PlayStation exclusives, I do want to get my hands on. And it's kind of, I mean, the reason I bought Shenmue 1 and 2 on the PlayStation 4, even though I just ripped on this, was to get the physical copy and not the, you know, the Steam downloadable version. But, yeah. I do want to get Detroit, and I do want to get, Horizon, but...
Someday. I want to get God of War, too. God of War is on my list. Yep. Uncharted games are on my list. I don't know if I'm going to get into Last of Us. After watching the E3 presentation of Last of Us, just... Boy, that game seems like a downer. Just look at it like, this is objectively great stuff, but I have enough stress in my life.
Yeah.
I don't know that I need this. And But boy, I'm so excited to sink my teeth further into Horizon. I just wish that it was... I'm so spoiled by the Switch and being able to play it on my break at work and play it in the bathroom in the morning and play it in the bed at night, that, you know, this Horizon game is tethered to this box that's in my basement, and I have to be down here to play it. Like, I can't play it on commercial breaks while we're watching TV or anything. I have to be down here exclusively playing that game, and that's going to be harder for me to spend enough time with. But I am very excited to really sink my teeth into it, because it's pretty cool. Because I have the PS4, and the only game I've played on it before this was Bubsy, which is terrible.
Jesus.
So it's nice to be able to see what the system's actually capable of in a very, very pretty manner. Okay, one last bit of just stupidity before we jump into any actual topics. This is going to be completely pointless by the time anyone hears this, because right now it's Tuesday, August 7th, and when this episode airs, it's going to be Friday. But tomorrow, Wednesday, the 8th, there is a Smash Brothers Direct. And I want to know if you have any predictions for characters.
I'm not a Smash Brothers person, man. I'm not really a fighting game person at all.
That makes it even better.
The last fighting game I was really
into
was the original Mortal Kombat on the Sega Genesis. It just... Oh, maybe some Virtua Fighter on the good old 32X, but...
All right, so you're predicting that... what's it, Akira from 32X version of Virtual Fighter is going to be in Smash Brothers? That's your...
No, I'm hoping for Cage. Was that his name? The ninja? Cage with a K? I don't remember now. Oh, jeez.
From Virtual Fighter?
Yeah. I thought the ninja was Cage with a K.
Is it? I got to look that up. I would not... Fighter,
but King. You know, I was like younger then, so like ninjas were like, I want to be the ninja, man. I don't want to.
Oh yeah, Cage was awesome. I love the graphics in the original Virtua Fighter. When the game started getting more and more realistic, I actually stopped caring about it.
Yeah.
There was just something so hysterical about those, because it was such a unique look. It wasn't... the original Virtua Fighter wasn't like, look how realistic this is. It's just like, all right, we've made a 3D fighting game, and everybody looks like polygons, and that's the look. And it was just freaking cool. Yeah, it was Cage, C-A-G-E. That's the ninja. He's awesome. Yeah, I'd pick Cage. That'd be cool. All right, that was fun.
Sorry, man. I know there's a lot of Smash Brothers fans out there. I mean, it looks like fun for a fighting game. Mm-hmm. I've played it here or there, but it's just not, you know, I've never got into that kind of stuff.
Understandably so. Dan hates Smash Brothers. Of course, Dan also hates Joy, so... Yeah, Dan's just a bad person. And he's not here to defend himself. Ha ha.
That's the best time to make fun of people.
When it
they
certainly
can't defend
is.
Themselves.
All right, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take ourselves a quick little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Ryan about the state of everything. We have lots of things to discuss, and it's going to be fun. So you're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com. First up, as the summer winds down, musicians are showing no signs of stopping. We're getting quite the variety of new releases this month, from Return to Hip Hop to a familiar name to a new duo you probably weren't expecting. There's something exciting and shiny for everyone out there. Read all about this and more in Turn It Up, New Music Releases for August 2018. Dan, you gonna read the next one? Oh wait, you're not here, so I'll read all of them. Next, Chip Garrison has found out what makes the Mission Impossible movies work. All you have to do is torture the crap out of Tom Cruise. Seriously, though, with the latest in the honestly shockingly long line of Mission Impossible movies proving again to be a success, and that Tom Cruise has barely aged in the last 20 years, it's way past time to dive into what makes these movies work, their similarities to James Bond, and just how much fun it is to watch Tom Cruise take a beating. Don't miss Ethan Hunt, America's masochistic James Bond, located in the think tank. And finally, for your 28th unpaid advertisement-laden visit to the Nonstop Comic Shop, Jordan begins with a trio of unfortunate apologies before reviewing Avengers 59 and 60, an infamous slice of the Silver Age that suggested Hank OG Ant-Man Pym's relationship to Janet OG Wasp Van Dyne may have had some unhealthy qualities from the start. Plus, there's lots of discussion on everything relating to the new Ant-Man and Wasp movie. Did they like it? Will you? Will I? Find out in the new Nonstop Comic Shop episode 28, It's an Ant World. You can catch all this great stuff plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com. All right, and we're back with a special guest, Ryan, from StoneAgeGamer.com, and we're going to talk about some stuff. Figured it would be fun to start off with some of the new products that I have been seeing popping up on the Facebook page. Now, this may sound like fake shilling, like, oh, let's talk about these new products I've been seeing. I work for this company, but I actually don't know a lot about the products. I'm not really in on that side. So I've seen some cool things, and I wanted to talk a little bit about them. The first thing I wanted to bring up, I think the last time you were on the show, we talked a bit about the bit boxes.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something about 16-bit Hue card and Game Gear bit boxes coming in the fall. Talk to me about this.
Well, yeah, they're in production now. So basically, the whole reason we originally made bit boxes was for flash cards. But so we were originally just going to make them for the flash cards. But we figured once we did that, people were going to probably want to buy them individually for their own games, and that's why we came up with the Bitbox brand, so we could kind of kill two birds with one stone there, get cases for the flash cards as well as sell them to people who want them. But so we slowly went through, because we were using those universal game cases, if you remember, long mm-hmm. time ago.
Yeah.
And those, you know, borderline junk, basically. I was never really happy with them, so we finally have made it through almost every single flash card we sell with a bit box, but the last one we don't. I mean, we do have a case for the Turbo EverDrive. It's that orange one. I don't know if you remember seeing it before. It actually looks really cool, but
it does. But it doesn't sit in there very well.
Well,
right? Like, didn't you have to do something to it?
We have to modify it a lot to get it to work, because it is for something else, a different product. It just so happened that, luckily, the dimensions, at least, you know, the width and height were about the same, but the depth, obviously, not close. So we had to do a bunch of modifying to the case. Mm-hmm. And the base case itself has gone up over time. I mean, to the point where we're paying a significant amount of money for this simple plastic case. So we finally broke down and we're like, let's just make a bit box for the Turbo EverDrive. But we've never actually had any kind of case for the Game Gear, mainly because it's the worst-selling flash card, to be honest with you. So it's never been a huge priority. But we figured, and the Turbo EverDrive sells pretty well, but we figured because of their sizes, they kind of crisscross each other, you know, in mm-hmm. width and height. So we're like, let's just do a hybrid case, you know, that can fit both, and finally we'll have that Game Gear covered.
Okay, so it's the same case. I'm looking at it now, and yep. I see that. Okay.
Yeah. So, in, you know, trying to get it, you know, the dimensions decent, you know, where it could hold the manuals for both systems, because, you know, we were actually going to do a smaller case originally, but then Game Gear manuals wouldn't fit. And really, we were having a problem with the Turbo graphics manuals as well, because they're CD sized. And so, and the case itself was CD sized, but the inside was a little bit smaller than a CD because, you know, they were usually for the cover art of the CD as well. So we went up to more of a DVD-sized case, which fits both manuals and the front cover area, luckily. So, we can't wait to get that because it's going to make our lives a little bit easier, and we'll finally be able to offer a deluxe version of the Game Gear or the EverDrive for Game Gear. So that's that.
That is that. That's I like this one quite a bit because I feel like TurboGrafx and particularly Game Gear are the kinds of things where the boxes just aren't around all that often, and it's always been one of my pet peeves to want to have display boxes for that kind of stuff. But I don't see a lot of box TurboGrafx stuff out there. I do see a lot of loose stuff out there, and it'll be really cool to be able to have. Because the thing about the TurboGrafx cue cards is that they're usually ugly as sin. But the cover arts are usually pretty cool, but you don't really get to see the cover arts all that much because there's almost none of it on the actual cards themselves. So, I don't know, having a nice display case like this, because, I mean, at conventions and stuff, I've messed with bitboxes. If anybody listening likes to get, you know, has some spare money to throw at some replacement cases for games they have that are loose, bitboxes are a very nice way to go. They're kind of like the, you had said a while ago that they were kind of like the, what is it, like vacuum something? Vacuum packs? Like old VHS cases or something?
Formed or thermal formed. I mean, they basically mean the same thing. Kind of like the old Disney VHS, but it's a thicker vinyl.
Yeah, they're really nice. If I had all the money, I'd want to replace most of my... I'd want to put a bunch of my Game Boy games in these. Because it's also nice, like... As a collector, and speaking to other collectors, one of the hardest things to figure out how to display properly is your loose Game Boy and Game Gear stuff. You know? Silly question. Would a Lynx game fit in any of this?
The Lynx games kind of fit in the Game Boy cases.
Really?
Our Game Boy cases. It's not perfect, but they do kind of snap in there. It's a little tight of a fit, but... you know, I don't know if anyone's using them for that purpose. That's something we noticed, but because it wasn't a perfect fit, it's not something we advertise. But yeah, it's definitely something you can do. It's the same with the Genesis case, or we call it the Sega case because it's Genesis, Master System, and 32X. But that will also fit Famicom, you know, the normal size Famicom games, and maybe a little bit taller as well. Because we use that case for our EverDrive N8 for the Famicom as well. But we don't advertise that because we don't want people... Because, you know, Famicom games came in different sizes and tallness. So we didn't want to advertise that and have people buy them for that reason and then be like, wait, this doesn't fit all my Famicom games. So it's a little tip if you're looking for something to store Famicom games of that size. But, you know, it's just something we don't advertise.
I guess that's one of the biggest... issues with, you know, besides probably lack of demand with doing like an Atari 2600 bit box, because there's like 18 different shaped kinds of games for that platform.
Right. You got a few of the double enders, and you know, stuff like that. I mean, that's probably our most commonly requested one is for the 2600. But again, like you said, the problem is there was no regulation on the cart shapes, but you could probably figure out something if you exclude the double enders that would fit most of them fine. Another problem though is the manuals are huge for most of those
games. They're pretty big,
so to make a case that fit, if you wanted to be able to put the manuals in the front cover area, it would have to be massive. So it's either you don't get somewhere to store your manual, or you have this huge case, you know, that, so that's, it's something that's probably not going to happen, you know, unless 2600 EverDrive ever gets made, but from what I know, that's probably never going to happen, so.
No, I mean, the Harmony cart's pretty much the standard on that. I don't know if this is anything that we can actually delve into, but I mean, have you guys ever looked into like carrying the Harmony card? Where is the Harmony card even sold? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure probably sometime in the past I had emailed the guy who made it.
Mm-hmm.
But my guess is either we never came to any agreement or he never responded back. You know, maybe it's something I could look into again. You know, for a while there, I was staying more loyal to Crixie's EverDrive products.
Mm-hmm.
But as other opportunities have presented themselves over time, we've kind of gone away from that exclusivity of just selling his stuff, especially with stuff that either he doesn't plan on making anything for, or, you know, it doesn't, you know, it might be a long shot that he would ever make anything for. So we don't, you know, like the Neo SD.
Yeah, it's not like he's jumping on a Neo Geo one, so that doesn't really hurt to do that. All right, well, bit boxes, that was fun. Let's see what else have I seen. Go ahead.
The
PSIO is coming back, right?
Well, we never had it.
Oh, that's right.
We showed it off 2 years ago.
Too
many games. We actually brought the whole full-size PlayStation kiosk and everything. Everyone wanted to buy them while they were there. Of course, we said, you know, we'll have them, you know, in a few months, whatever, because that's what we thought at the time. It was a lot of back and forth with the creator. Eventually, the guy told me, I'm getting the shell, my own molds made. He was buying some generic shell that he was cutting himself for the SD card slot. He's like, I'm going to get my own shells made. Well, this was sometime last year, like early 2017, I want to say. And I would message him every once in a while, but like I stopped hearing from him. I'm like, okay, well, apparently this is dead. Well, then earlier this year, he had messaged me and said, I'm getting close to being able to go in full production. And I'm like, where have you been, man? Because I thought for sure he just flaked out. Like, you know, because it happens a lot with this kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there was a lot of negotiating back and forth on prices and stuff like that. But eventually we did come to an agreement. And so we should be getting a shipment of quite a few this fall. So, you know, I'm hoping that'll all go well. It's a really nice product. He did a really good job on it. You know, the interface is nice, you know.
Kind of explain to folks what it is in case they don't know.
I mean, the simplest way to explain it is it's a flash cart for your original PlayStation. You need the original PlayStation with the parallel port in the back, because it plugs into the parallel port of the back. The one major downside of the product is it does require a simple mod to work to the system to bypass the CD-ROM. The nice thing about it, though, is that you can use either the CD-ROM or it, unlike some of like other solutions for, you know, CD-ROM replacements that totally remove the CD-ROM from the equation. So that is a downside. So our plan is to pre-mod a lot of systems before we receive our shipment. So people will have at least the option. They can buy it with the pre-modded system, or we can do the mod for them on their own system, or they can do the mod themselves. But it's not a complex mod. We did the mod ourselves, and most of our guys, you know, aren't really, you know, super electronic geniuses or anything like that. So, we did sell a few of these already earlier last month, the Super System SD3.
That was my next question. I saw that pop up on your Facebook page back in July, and I was like, won't last long. We have very limited stock of the Super System SD3. And I'm like, what is this thing? So yeah. What the heck was that?
So this is made by the same guys that made the Neo SD.
Okay.
Basically, again, it's kind of a flash cart for your PC Engine or your TurboGrafx-16. Now you're like, well, isn't the Turbo EverDrive that? And it is. But the Turbo EverDrive plugs into your Hue card slot and obviously can only play Hue card games. This plugs into the back expansion port of your system and can not only play the Hue card games, it also emulates all the specialty cards like the system card, the arcade card, and it also can play TurboGrafx and PC Engine CD-ROM games. So it can play the ISO files. And on top of all that, it also has composite S-Video and RGB out on the back of it. So wow. it also replaces the turbo booster as well. So it's basically three products in one in a way. So it's pretty amazing. The Terra Onion guys are kind of thinking outside the box when it comes to this kind of stuff, which really impresses me, you know. Doing something different. So that's the first like kind of flash cart we've sold that competes against another one that we sell, you know, from a different company. But the prices are so different that I think, you know, obviously two different markets, you know, there as well.
Why are these so limited? Why were these...
They only sent us... Well, they took... They've only did the Neo SD before this product. Well, they thought, you know what we'll do on our next product, because the Neo SD did so well, we'll take a bunch of pre-orders. Now, if you would have asked my opinion on that, I would have told them, don't take a bunch of pre-orders. Because pre-orders are a nightmare for the most part, especially with something that's in development, not something that's already been developed and you know you will receive it eventually. So I think they sent out 100 units, but there was a major flaw in it. So they had to recall all those 100 units. Now, I didn't sell any of these because they said, we'll sell the first batches of units. That way, just in case there is any problems, you know, I don't have to take returns and then send returns back to them, you know. So they had to recall all those. I guess they destroyed them, so they got more ordered. But they, at this point, they just allowed the pre-orders to run. And I think they racked up over 500, 600 pre-orders.
Wow.
And it took them... And then there was another small flaw found with the sound that could be fixed with a resistor, I believe. So they had to manually solder all these resistors into all these. So it was kind of a nightmare for them. So eventually, after they got all those problems fixed, he's like, we have 20 left. We'll send them to you. And he's like, we have hundreds of more coming, you know, in the next batch.
Well, that's cool.
So we took the 20. Of course, they sold out in like 5 minutes. We expected them to do that. But I think there was also a memory shortage as well, with specific memory chips that might have caused a problem. I'm not sure if it caused a problem with that. I know it caused a problem earlier this year with some EverDrives, like the SD, or SD Destiny S technically isn't an EverDrive, but a flash cart. Like the 128 megabit chips or something. Mm-hmm. Apparently those are hard to find now, and they don't know if they're going to ever be made anymore. So they've had to kind of reconfigure some things, and you know, it really slowed down shipments for a while there. So we're hoping to have more of those in, and we'll have hundreds and hundreds of those next time, so they shouldn't just instantly sell out. But
how much are those guys?
Those, I want to say, are about, what's the exact price? I think around 280, but I don't know the exact price.
That is spicy, but it's also pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about buying an actual turbo booster plus, I mean, really, you can't, there's nothing besides the CD-ROM attachment that you can play CD-ROMs with, so.
Yeah.
Let me see. 285 is what we have it listed for. Now, that might change depending on the next batch, but, so that's exciting. That's, you know, a great new product. When he first told, I mean, he kept it secret for a long time, and finally he told me about it, and I'm like, holy crap. you're going to sell a lot of these. You know, even though, you know, even though it's not the most popular system, I mean, with all this that this can do, you know, it's pretty much, you know, the go-to solution. Now, if you want,
I mean, I can't imagine any serious topographics collector not just positively salivating about this thing.
Right, exactly. So, yeah.
So you had mentioned the SD2 SNES earlier. I know there's a bunch of stuff going on with that. What is happening in the world of SD2 SNES right now?
Well, the SD to SNES came out, well, I think we started selling it in 2011. The original creator, Arcari 01, might have started selling them in 2010. I'm not sure. But when Crick ZZ took over production, I think it was in 2011. That has a super powerful FPGA in it, with the idea that eventually it would be able to emulate most of, if not all, the special enhancement chips that some Super Nintendo games came with inside. Specifically, you know, the Super FX, the DSP, there's DSP 1, 2, 3, 4, and SA1. And then there's quite a few others that were one or two games that were made, or that chip worked on. But for the longest time, Super FX support and SA1 support was never added. And those, besides the DSP, one chip were, had some of the heavy hitting games on it, you know. Then earlier this year, a guy who goes under the handle Red Guy released a beta firmware for Super FX support. And maybe a month or so later, they released the official firmware update with Super FX. And then found out he was working on SA1. Support, which now is in beta, which my guess is probably will go get into the official firmware within the next month. I mean, in Super FX and SA1, that adds about another 45 games of compatibility. Plus, the only way outside of buying a hacked cart to play Star Fox 2 on the original hardware.
Wow, you actually just reminded me of two different things. I mean, I'm assuming the final version of Star Fox 2 that they put in the Super NES Classic Edition, that's showed up somewhere, right? I'm sure somebody has dumped that by now.
Yeah, I don't know if that I don't know if they added anything to that, or I'm pretty sure it was a complete game, wasn't it? They just never released it because by that point in time, N64 was on the horizon, and they didn't want to really remind people how inferior, you know, SNES absolutely. Was.
I thought I had read somewhere that the Star Fox 2 version that had been online was like a 90% finished one or something like that, and there's just some minor tweaks or whatever
that might be
in the final version.
There might have been some people that actually fixed it themselves as well. You know, I don't know, but...
Sidetrack. Do you know whatever happened with that SimCity for NES? Like, I know somebody bought it so that they could dump it online. Like, it didn't wind up going to, like, some private collector that was just going to lock it in a box forever. But do you know if that ever actually happened?
No idea.
I gotta look that up. That was, like, so freaking fascinating to me that that actually happened. And I really want to play that game. I want to play the version of it. I want to hear the music and everything. But anyway, going back to it. So, yeah, SA1 and Super FX support. That's pretty awesome. The Super FX, is that FX1 and 2 support?
Yeah, yeah. I doubt there's much difference between the chips. I know they're technically different, but my guess is they operate pretty much exactly the same. There might have been just like bug fixes in the two, you know, for all I know, and that's the only major difference between them. I don't know if it had more performance or anything like that over the original.
Well, we can play some sweet Dirt Tracks FX.
yeah.
To be fair, Stunt Race FX is like, I love that game to death, and Oddly enough, so does Andre Seegers from Game Explain. That cracks me up every time he brings it up, because he's always like talking about Stunt Race FX being in things, and I'm just like the one guy in the back. I'm like, yeah, somebody else. Somebody else yeah. appreciates the wonder of that of Stunt Race FX. That game is great. But every time I've ever emulated it, it's always been like all screwy looking. Because even if I have a version on like my Raspberry Pi, there's like a couple of little things here and there that are just kind of off. Like an icon here and there will just be like some weird garbled mess instead of the actual icon it's supposed to be. Because I haven't had an opportunity to just hook up a Super Nintendo and plug my damn cartridge in there and play it from there. But if the SD2 SNES is going to support it properly, that would be a pretty nice thing to have. That and just nothing like marveling at the fact that Doom runs on a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
That's still amazing to me.
Yeah, it's amazing what they were able to pull off with on some of those classic systems.
It really was. Like, I remember seeing Street Fighter Alpha 2 on the Super Nintendo. I mean, like, seriously? Like, why did you do this? I guess it's coming out in 96. There's not a lot of people, like, hunting for new Super Nintendo games at that point. Nah, screw it. Alpha 2, Super Nintendo, we're doing it because we can. It's absolutely ridiculous. All right, are there any other interesting newer product things? I think I ran down the list of the ones that I wanted to mention that I had questions about.
Well, we have another one coming off, but it might be not until early next year at this point. The Neo SD Pro, which is going to be basically a step up from the regular Neo SD. So we'll continue to sell the Neo SD as like a base version, but then there'll be the Pro. And the main advantage of the Pro is the original one had one slot of memory, so you could load the game into flash memory. And obviously you did some booths with us at TMG. It's not the fastest because it's flash memory. It's not in the size of Neo Geo games is pretty massive compared to games from that era. So it might take a few minutes, up to a few minutes, to flash a large game on the original Neo SD. But the new one has four flash slots, so you can preload up to four games, and then one RAM slot, so you can load a fifth game into, and it loads way faster into RAM than obviously flash. So you have kind of one that you can go through games quicker if you're flipping through playing different games or, you know, stuff like that. So that'll be the main advantage of the new cart.
I imagine that will not be cheap.
No, I don't even know the price. People email us every once in a while asking. I've talked to the guy about it. But with memory shortages and that kind of stuff, I don't know if the price is going to end up going up from the last time I talked to him. But doing the conversion from euros, my guess is it's going to be somewhere between $625 to $700 would be my guess, MSRP. So it will only be for the even more hardcore Neo Geo people. And really, I mean, the Neo SD is still a great product. I mean, you got to really weigh, is that extra, few hundred, 250 really worth a feature that, in the end, how often, if you're playing a game, are you constantly switching, you know, back and forth? Not always. And really,
not with Neo Geo games. With something like, you know, NES games, I switched pretty quickly. But with a Neo Geo, I messed with it when you had it at the Too Many Games, and you know it was kind of a pain when you'd go in there and be like, "All right, it's time to switch games." But then you'd just be sitting there talking about Neo Geo games for a minute with whoever you're next to, and I guess that would be kind of boring when you're on your own. But at the same time, it's just like, well, here's the whole thing. It's and it's not. I don't know. For some reason, flash carts, I like them better than multi carts. Like multi carts are just like, this is this closed off thing. This is what is on here. And if there's any sort of flash carts are so much more upgradable, I guess, you know, if something changes or if there's a, you know, somebody makes a new game or something like that, you can always add to them. And the multi cards, you can't really do that. So I don't know. I think it's out of my range. I don't have a Neo Geo. I never have, and I probably never will. So it's like pretty far out of my wheelhouse. But boy, if I did have one, I'd want one.
Yeah, I mean, personally, if I were gonna buy one to use at home on an AES, I would probably just get the original, the normal one for me. But like, if I had a an MVS cabinet that was in a place where people played it a lot, then maybe the Pro would be better for the faster switching of games and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, so I guess that kind of covers all the fancy new products and cool things. I know you just relatively recently launched the new website, the new fancy StoneAgeGamer.com.
Yeah, back in April.
April. It's August now. Yeah, I'm timely. Yeah, I mean, I'm on it.
Well, that's probably more my fault, like, because there was still a lot of work to do after it launched. I mean, I spent about 8 months, because I probably told you a long time before it launched that, yeah, we're going to be launching any month now. But yeah, it took me about 8 months of working on it to get it to where we were happy with, you know, feeling comfortable with launching it. Because I am a programmer by trade, so I wanted to learn how everything worked with it, with our the new platform we were switching with. I wanted to be able to write custom things for it, because there's a lot, you know, with EverDrives and stuff like that, there's stuff that we do that some other stores don't typically do, so they're not included with the package and stuff like that. So I spent a lot of time learning how their API worked and all this kind of stuff. And obviously getting the site designed, you know, how I wanted it. And so it took quite a while, but we're really happy with it.
I like it. I'm still transferring all the blog posts over to the new site.
Yeah. The one downside, but honestly, WordPress is, it's all insecure anyway. We always had, you know, constant security updates with WordPress. Mm. You know, it's a nicer platform, but, you know, this Geekade is much more locked down.
Yeah, Geekade's on a WordPress-based thing, and we don't really have to worry about security too much, because we don't sell anything and nobody knows who we are.
Right, so. Right. So that was obviously more important to us, because on the old site. But
it's a really nice design. I like it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's finally mobile friendly. You know, 2017, we finally had a mobile friendly site. You know, we switched to flat rate shipping. Which we weren't sure if customers were going to like or not, but so far it seems that they like it better. You know, in some cases the customer might be paying a little bit more for shipping than they used to, but in most cases you're paying less. Because it just makes it easier, because you don't have to worry about what you're adding to your cart. You know, you always know the shipping's going to be $6, mm-hmm. you know, for US, no matter what's in your cart outside of bit boxes. Because those are just too heavy. Sorry, guys, we can't include those in flat rate shipping. But everything else is flat rate. And just to help people, to guide people with, you know, because buying a flash cart, it can be kind of intimidating. So we tried to more direct people on what's the differences between the two, you know, and kind of direct them where to go and which one, you know, would be best for them, and stuff like that. And we have more currency options, so you can, like, if you come to the site from the UK, you'll see all the prices in pounds. So it gives you a better idea of what you'll actually be paying, you know, instead of you having to convert it yourself and stuff like that.
Yeah, those bits of improvement, I've I was fond of, because, yeah, buying flashcards is, I mean, even as somebody that's me, I mean, I'm the host of your damn podcast, and I would even look at a lot of the flashcard stuff. Like, when we did that commercial for the N8 a while back, there was just a lot to it. There's a lot of, the people that know look at you like you're a crazy person for asking these questions. Like, I've seen some bananas stuff on, like, messages, not message boards. This isn't the 90s. But, you know, Reddit or whatever, where people will ask a question and be kind of berated for it being a stupid question. And I look at it like, there are no stupid questions, because your average person, like, thinks this is voodoo magic. Like, do I buy just the board? Like, what do you mean the case is separate? I don't understand. And when you set up in the new site where you just kind of like, this is what it is, here's the thing that you can buy, and you buy this, and then you plug it in, and it'll do things, and that kind of stuff is very appreciative. I think it is appreciated, and I like that you try to normalize this stuff a bit, just kind of make it a little bit more of, here is a product that you buy, and it will work when you buy it, as opposed to, like, you know, when I bought my Raspberry Pi, and you ask just about anybody. You talk about emulation, and they're like, oh, just buy a Raspberry Pi. You don't need to do any of that stuff. Like, well, there's so much that can go wrong with it. I still can't get wireless controllers to work on my Raspberry Pi at all. And I've had 3 different people look at it who have their own Pis, who, like, do this, like, all kinds of computery stuff for a living. Nobody knows why this thing won't work. Because lots of different things that can go wrong with it. You're basically buying a little mini computer that you're mini building yourself. And to the people who know what that is just like, you know, a monkey could do it. But as a monkey, I am telling you, a monkey can't always do it. And the fact that you make things like EverDrives that seem very intimidating, accessible, I think is pretty wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some more stuff we would like to do, tutorials and stuff. But, you know, unfortunately, we're somewhat limited legally on what we can say, because, you know, you're supposed to make your own copies of your own games to play them. We can't help you beyond that. We get emails all the time. Well, if I just pay you money, will you put all the games on there for me? You know, stuff like that. No, we are not going to do that. You know, we do, I don't know if you noticed, but we do now, some of them we've licensed games for different flashcards. So they're legal licenses to play those games on the flashcards. So we give those away free with whatever flashcards we've licensed them for. You know, and another thing that we could actually do tutorials on how, and that's something I want to do now that we have licensed games, I can do a tutorial of how to get those licensed games to run. And obviously that gives you a good idea how the whole process works, you know? So that's that's another thing we've done, with flashcards, but I would like to, you know, make it a little bit easier on people in the long run with tutorials and stuff like that. But we'll see. You know, that all takes a lot of time. As you know from just doing that one video, that we've never really gone back and done more, and that's something I want to do. It's a lot of work, obviously, to do that. And then with it constantly changing, I don't know if the next week Crixie's is going to release an update or a new version. You know, we just spent a bunch of time on a video for it to basically, I mean, that video you helped us make is basically all out of date now.
Yeah, it's completely outdated.
Yeah.
It's still up on the YouTube page, and every time it shows up, I'm like, I should really redo this.
Yeah, so something we need to get to. It's just, you know, only so much time in the day to get to it. And the only other thing I think, well, we've done a few other things with the site. We're doing an affiliate program now.
Yeah, so, there's something with tickets and stuff, or that's
no.
Is that
this
related
is
to that,
like, this is like a content creator affiliate program. So, if you do YouTube videos or write a blog or podcast or anything like that, if you contact us at like support@stonegamer.com, we can make you an affiliate, and basically, depending on how big your blog or channel or whatever is, it will depend on what level affiliate you are. But you can earn cash, not store credit, but actual cash back from whatever sales that you generate with your, you know, custom link. You know how a lot of affiliate program, you see like YouTubers like, click my affiliate link below. You know, they get a percentage of whatever's bought through that affiliate link. And that's how this works as well. So, I mean, that's helped a little bit. I mean, we really haven't advertised it yet because we've still been testing it, making sure everything works well. But we do have a few, you know, sites and YouTubers and stuff on it. That's nice. So if you are a content creator and you are interested in something like that, let us know. And then the last thing we started doing is the Stone Age Gamer donates. So this has been something we've been wanting to do for a long time, but with the new site, we decided to finally get around to getting this all done. And basically, this is just in lieu of a sale sometimes, what we'll do is we'll take a percentage of the sales during that period and donate them to a charity. So we did one back in June for, I think it was the, I don't know the exact name, but it was a charity for blind children. So for like, you know, maybe it was a week and a half or something, we took 5% of everything we brought in through the site, then donated it to that charity. And the reason we picked that charity was because we asked people for their personal experiences with charities. Because I want to know if I'm donating to a charity that someone's actually interacted with this charity or worked for this charity or something that makes me feel confident of sending, you know, of donating to that charity and that the money's going to go where it should be going. So this guy wrote us a message on Facebook about how his son was born blind and that this charity really helped his family, because basically his wife had to quit her job because, you know, having a blind child is basically a full-time job. I mean, you don't get a break at all. I mean, having a child in general is, but obviously much worse. And so that's why we chose that one for the our first one. And then we'll be doing one starting tomorrow for Extra Life, which I think is benefits the Children Miracle Network, which is a network of children's hospitals. And then hopefully when you guys do your Pain in the Acidon, we'll do something related to that and kind of do a promotion alongside that to donate.
Yeah, absolutely. That's coming in September. We're in the planning phases. We're definitely doing the Pain in the Acidon this year. It's probably going to be September. Well, not probably. It's going to be September 22nd and 23rd. We're still nailing down all the different games. I'll be completing the Unholy Triforce and playing a Zelda's Adventure. But yeah, that goes to the Colon Cancer Alliance, which is, you know, there's people involved in Geekade, including my wife, who have connections to colon cancer and whatnot. So that's definitely a charity that means a lot to us. So yeah, thanks in advance for that. I like that whole idea of giving a charity. Boy, that was me going out on a limb, huh? I like the idea of giving a charity. Good, yeah. Things are good. So what's the ticket thing I'm looking at? I get so confused by websites all the time. There's something.
Well,
to do
prize
with,
tickets is our rewards points for customers. Okay. You know, we call them prize tickets because obviously arcade related, retro gaming. And gotcha. Originally, you could on our old site long time ago, you could actually buy like special stuff with your tickets. That was the only way to buy it. The reason we got rid of that was basically, you know, it was not very common for someone to save up enough tickets, just like in a real arcade. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of work for very, you know, little reward. And most people just bought gift certificates with them, not products or anything like that. So, yeah, that's what it is. So the current promotion we have running till midnight tonight is the three times price tickets if you earn if you order $100 or more. People have claimed thousands and thousands of dollars since we've launched the new site. I think it's a pretty fair reward system. I mean, basically on your normal day, you're earning about 5 to 10% back. Just depends on how much points you save, because unlike most systems, the more points you save, the cheaper things are, you know, instead of it just, you know. So $5 off might be 500 tickets, but $100 off is 6,000. Now, if you do the math, that's actually saving up to the $100 off is actually, when you divide it, it's a better deal, right, if you save your tickets. But for people that don't really like to save, it doesn't take much to earn the 500 tickets to get $5 off. Sometimes we just give those out for logging in.
Sweet. Well, I gotta say, we had a whole other thing talking. We were gonna talk about, what's it like getting into the games business and how we feel about retro games. But it's getting late, so I think we actually have to call this. Which means I'm just gonna have to have you on again soon, Ryan.
Yep.
And by soon, I don't mean in 2 years.
2 years.
Because that's how we roll around here. I want to get you on for one of our ridiculous trivia episodes sometime soon. Because those are fun. All right. Well, then that's it. I'm going to call it. That's our show. Thank you, Ryan, again for joining us. Join us next week when we'll be putting up the audio from our panel at Long Island Retro, which is this weekend. If you're not going to be there, it's going to be your chance to find out what me, Dean, and Matt think the best worst controller is. It's going to be ridiculous. I have printed out tournament brackets. Dean has bought easels from Amazon. We're bringing props. It's going to be stupid, and I'm really excited about it. So once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram at Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter at @the_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm at Geekade Chris, that's Geekade KRIS. And Dan, if you want to follow that guy, he's at Geekade Dan, that's Geekade DAN. If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed here tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher. Or if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making this show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh, original content. Ryan, do you have any final messages for the folks listening to our show?
Basically, if there is a charity you would like us to promote and one of our Stone Age Gamer donates, please email us at support@StoneAgeGamer.com with your experience with that charity, whether, you know, you worked there or you dealt with them. You know, everything's confidential. We're not going to post your story online. It's just for us to know, you know, where the money is going and feel comfortable with that. So that's about it.
Cool. Well, thank you very much again for joining us. And thank everybody for listening. And that's all we got. On behalf of myself and Ryan and Dan, who's off gallivanting in Disney or whatever, keep playing games.